No, I think that's Desi closing the curtains.
Sorry.
Okay. No worries, but I will go ahead and call to order the special meeting of the Gover Beach City Council at 5:30 on July 20th. I will ask Ms. Sims to do a call to order. Actually, I'll do a call to order. Then, in compliance with the state and county shelter at home ordinance, meetings will be held by teleconference only until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on Channel 20 and is available on live streaming at the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. Members of the public may provide public comment during the meeting by calling area code 805-321-6639, and those phone lines are open right now. So, Madam City Clerk, if you would do a roll call, please.
Okay. Councilmember Lance?
Here.
Councilmember Shaw?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Here.
Mayor Lee?
I am here as well. So we will proceed as we do have a quorum. And next we'll go into public communications. So if there are any members of the public that do want to call on our closed session item, please call in at 805-321-6639 if you'd like to make any public comment on the closed session item. City Clerk Sims, do we have any anybody on the line or emails for closed session?
No, we do not.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close public communications. I'm running back to closed session and have our city attorney announce our closed session, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We're going to convene in closed session for a conference with real property negotiators for the sale or lease of city property, APN 060242-45 and 44. Agency negotiators are Matthew Bronson, City Manager, David Hale, City Attorney, and Bruce Buckingham, Director of Community Development. The negotiating parties are the Veterans of Foreign Wars National Home for Children. That's pursuant to Government Code 4956.8.
Very good. So with that, we will go ahead and recess or into closed session. And our intent is to be done before 6 p.m., but if we do run long, we will give the city manager the opportunity to alert the necessary folks. So with that, we are recessed into closed session.
Thank you, council.
So we'll kind of give her a second. Let's see, so City Clerk, have we tracked down the Mayor Pro Tem?
Not yet. I believe the city manager is reaching out to her.
Okay. We'll give her just another minute.
I see she is on.
Okay, very good. Then I will go ahead and call to order our City Council meeting of Monday, July 20th, 2020 at 6:10 p.m. And before we actually do a call to order, we did have a closed session at 5:30, and I'll turn it over to our city attorney for any closed session announcements, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There was no reportable action this evening from the closed session.
Very good. Thank you for that announcement. So I will call to order the meeting, and in compliance with the state and county sheltered home orders, meetings are being held via teleconference until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on Channel 20 and is available as live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. And members of the public may provide public comments during this meeting by calling 805-321-6639, and those phone lines are open. So if you would join me in a moment of silence, if you would, and then also a moment of positivity as we wish Frosty his 101st birthday celebration was yesterday. And I remember when we celebrated his 100th birthday last year, and it's been a year already. So let's a moment of positivity for Frosty on his 100th birthday, and a moment of silence, please. Very good. Thank you, everyone, for joining me in that moment. And now, if you would go ahead and mute yourselves, and we'll do a flag salute. If you would envision a flag, looks like Mr. Deal's tie is a flag that we can use this evening as a representation of that. So I'll go ahead and lead the flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Very good. Thank you, everyone, for that. So now we still don't have any closed session announcements from our prior meeting, so I will go turn this into agenda review, where at this time the council will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. Any member of the council, or does our city manager have any changes that they'd like to do?
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as written.
I'll second that.
We have a motion. We'll say that Mayor Pro Tem Bright got in just under the wire of Councilmember Lamb. So all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Very good. We'll go ahead and proceed with the agenda as published. And looks like this evening we don't have any ceremonial calendar. And we don't have any presentation calendar this evening, so that'll take us into our public communications, where, just as a reminder, please call in at area code 805-321-6639 if you'd like to provide any public comment this evening. So during this time, the council... Oh, yes.
We do need to take roll.
I apologize. I did skip right over that. So, Madam City Clerk, roll call, please.
Councilmember Lance.
Here.
Councilmember Shaw?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Here.
Mayor Lee?
Here. I do feel like we did that. So, but it's always good to make sure. So with that, I will go into public communications, where at this time the council will allow public communications with additional communication if necessary after the regular business items, and any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the council, and the council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on tonight's agenda. So I'll turn it over to City Clerk Sims and see if there are any members of the public on the line for public communication.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Thank you for that. Do we have any emails that we've received today regarding public communication?
No, we have not.
Very good. Then thank you for that. I will go ahead and close public communications and take this to our consent agenda, where we do have several routine items listed below for consideration as a group. And we will see if there's any questions from the council on any items specifically. So we'll start with Councilmember Lance.
No questions.
Very good. Councilmember Shaw.
I didn't have questions, but I did want to bring up something about our COVID response that was emailed to me. And I didn't know if I should do that now or I can wait till council communication.
Let's go ahead and see if we have any questions, and then we can do that under the kind of the comment section of consent agenda. So, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, do you have any questions?
No questions. Thank you.
Very, very good. So, so let's see if we have any public communications under consent agenda. City Clerk Sims.
No, we have no callers.
Very good. Then I will return it back. And Councilmember Shaw, let's go ahead and provide your comments.
Okay. I was just looking over the email, so I say this correctly. But the state moratorium on evictions related to COVID is expiring, possibly in August. And I know early on we had sent a letter to the state expressing our support for some sort of moratorium and protection from evictions. And the activist, I got this from a housing activist who said right now there's a bill pending, AB 1436, that will enact a state moratorium, but it needs to be passed in order for that to happen. So I wasn't sure, given the fact that we had supported a moratorium in the past, would we be able to express support either for this bill or for furthering the moratorium, or at least, or is it something to agendize later? Although not too much later, because it's expiring in August.
Gotcha. Actually, this would be our last opportunity before August 17th to provide that. So let's, under discussion, and City Attorney Hale, let me know if I go too far afield here, but it sounds like from Councilmember Shaw's determination or comments, we should be able to either write a letter of support for the bill if the council, based upon prior direction. And so maybe the directive to staff rather than supportive resolution or bringing it back to agendize. Is there any concern with any members of the council of Matt putting together, the city manager putting together a letter for my signature?
I would like to read the bill.
Okay.
And I can also forward this, the email that I got with the information, to our city manager, just so he can look at it and share with us or different council members, like the name of the bill and the background that I have.
Very good. So from that perspective, it sounds like it would need to come back for the 17th as a kind of agendized determination. If any concerns with that, City Manager, from a timing perspective?
Not from a timing perspective. I think the legislative action will probably take place in August, so the timing may fit in to that.
Okay, very good. So I guess perhaps the if I'm hearing consensus, and I don't see Mayor Pro Tem Bright, see if she has any comments on this discussion. Here she comes.
Sorry, I'm having technical difficulties. No, I think that makes sense to me. So okay. I think we should go forward in that fashion.
Okay, very good. City Manager, any other clarification you need from us on that item?
No, sir.
Okay, very good. So so then it looks like we do have the opportunity to take these all as one action. So does anyone want to make a motion on the consent agenda? I will go ahead and make a motion that we approve the consent agenda this evening, which are items 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, which include Treasurer's Report, and Treasurer's Report for the 2017 Street Bonds, minutes of the City Council of July 6th, the Fair Equitable Sharing Agreement between the City and the Federal Government and the State Sheriff's Department, and then the COVID-19 Response Update.
I'll second that.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. This does look like a roll call vote. So, Madam Clerk, if you would please.
Mayor Lee?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
Councilmember Lance?
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw?
Yes.
Very good. So we have approved the consent agenda this evening. So that will take us to our public hearing, item number six, which is a potential programs for inclusion in the 2020 State Community Development Block Grant Coronavirus Response Round 1, CDBG-CV1 application. Community Development Director Buckingham.
Good evening, Mayor. I'm going to turn this over to Associate Planner Reese to give the presentation.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. Wendy, can you put the PowerPoint up, please? The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or more commonly known as HUD, has a community development block grant program which authorizes the use of funds to assist low and moderate income individuals. The California Department of Housing and Community Development Department receives some of these funds every year for the state's program to allocate to eligible non-entitlement jurisdictions. As part of the federal Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, or CARES Act, passed in March, approximately $18.7 million in CDBG coronavirus response funds were authorized for the state of California to prevent and prepare for and respond to the virus. On June 5th, the HCD published a notice of funding of availability for this round of funding. There is another round of funding that the state has been notified of, but we don't have the details of that yet. So this public hearing tonight is just for round one. For this round, funds were allocated by formula to all CDBG non-entitlement jurisdictions for CDBG eligible COVID-related activities. The city has been allocated $101,000. Up to 17% of that, or about $17,000, can be used for general administration costs associated with this grant, which leaves $84,000 for programs. All funds must be expended within 12 months of the execution of the state contract, which is likely to occur in October. In contrast, a normal CDBG funding cycle, those funds are good for 3 years. These funds have to be expended within 1 year versus the normal three. Due to CDBG regulations, the city is required to hold a public hearing to discuss the potential applications and allow for public input. Therefore, tonight's hearing is for the council to review potential CDBG CV1 projects or activities and provide direction on which activities that staff should include in the application or applications. Just like regular CDBG, eligible activities must benefit low and moderate income persons. And while the normal CDBG program, if you've seen my presentations before, have a number of eligible activities or eligible categories for activities. I believe it's like a dozen or so. Due to the purpose of the CARES Act, the eligible activities have been narrowed down to these four. Facility acquisition or improvements to increase capacity for healthcare facilities, acquisition or improvements for housing facilities for persons experiencing homelessness, economic development activities that result in job retention, and public service activities to respond to virus impacts. In order to provide the council a list of some potential activities after attending HCD's webinars regarding this funding at the end of June, staff consultant with consulted with the city's consultant, Adams Ashby Group, to provide a discussion of potential activities by category, basically. So the first category was the facility acquisition for healthcare facilities. This category does not appear to be an eligible activity for the city, as the hospital, as a hospital facility, does not exist within the city. Second one, acquisition or improvements of facilities for persons experiencing homelessness. During the HCD webinars, examples of eligible uses for this category were not provided. Some potential activities which were suggested by some of the webinar participants, the state responded with that those examples were actually activities that were more eligible for other funding sources and not CDBG eligible. Therefore, staff is unaware of any eligible activities for this category. The third one is economic development activities, specifically that result in job retention. Example in this category includes a forgivable loan for improvements that would allow a business to open and operate, which results, of course, in retaining an employee's position. CDBG regulations allow $35,000 of assistance per job retained, but due to underwriting requirements costing approximately $10,000 per job retained, a business generally receives only about $25,000 of the $35,000 maximum. Based on the amount of the city's allocation, just a couple jobs would likely be retained, and therefore the staff does not recommend this funding be utilized for economic development programs. In addition, the council and chamber recently provided a micro grant program for businesses with other funds. For public service activities that respond to COVID-19 impacts, due to the city's current subrecipient agreement with Five Cities Homeless Coalition, staff consulted with them to identify two eligible programs. It should be noted that Jana was also on the webinar calls with the same webinar calls that I was on with HCD. So she also was on the calls about what activities would be eligible. So we have Winter Warming Center Operation Program from November to April annually on nights that are forecasted to have temperatures below 40 degrees or with rain forecasted at 50% or greater. Five Cities Homeless Coalition has been operating a winter warming center at Life Point Church in Grover Beach, staffed by volunteers. However, this year, since the onset of COVID-19 in March, volunteers were unable to staff the center, and therefore it was necessary to pay staff to operate the center until April. They are requesting nearly $42,000 to assist with COVID-19 preparations and staffing to operate the warming center for the upcoming winter season. Additional funding for the center will be requested of other local agencies and private contributors. This past year's center operated without significant issues or calls for service, and such a program is consistent with the council's housing and homelessness major city goal. The second program Five Cities Homeless Coalition is proposing is to partner with Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo, or CAPSLO, to provide training to individuals in order to become licensed family child care providers and create or establish facilities to help alleviate the shortage of child care programs. With many schools, recreations, and camp programs canceled or operating at reduced capacity, working parents are unable to return to work due to the lack of capacity in local child care programs. The request is for $42,000 to pay for the training and some computers for the provider or future providers to be able to do the necessary paperwork and other things on the computers. This program would also be a component or could also be a component of the city's forthcoming child care initiative. In conclusion, staff is requesting the council provide guidance and authorization on the programs to apply for, to utilize the funding allocated to the city. Based on the provided analysis, staff recommends that the funds be allocated to the Winter Warming Center Operation Program and the Child Care Training and Licensing Program. We're also asking to have authorization to submit the applications through the attached resolution. The council could allocate funding to one or more other programs as an alternative, and we would modify the resolution accordingly. It should be noted that the amount of up to $52,000 noted in the resolution and on the screen actually just allows for some minor adjustments, but the total for the application will not exceed our allocation of $101,532. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Reese, for that very informative presentation. Let's see if there's any questions from the council. So we'll start with Councilmember Lance, see if you have any questions.
No questions. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Shaw.
No questions. Thank you. It was a great presentation.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. I do just a couple of just general curiosity questions, if you don't mind. So the child care training and licensing program, which national objective would that meet? Do you know?
I don't remember exactly. I didn't make the note. Paul Ashby of Adams Ashby is on the line, and he probably knows it off the top of his head. But we did make sure it met a federal code.
Okay. I was just wondering.
It's a public service code. It's not an economic development one. I remember that, but I don't remember the code. Jana is also on the line besides Paul being on the line.
Okay. All right. I was just curious on which one of those. I mean, not that I think it's a great idea. I was just wondering. So I have comments.
Jana, can you hear me? Pardon me? Sorry, this is Paul Ashby.
Oh, hang on a second, Mr. Ashby. We'll let's see if there's any other questions from the council, and then I'll come directly to you, okay?
Okay, I apologize.
No worries. Very good. So, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, any other questions? Or I think I heard you were going to say you had comments.
I have comments, and I did have just one other question, and that was just the general cost of licensing for the child care licensing, and was that all? There would be no, or would there be any additional startup costs that would be that they would assist with, or anything like that?
Not, they did not propose to assist with any other costs.
Okay, just the training and the licensing.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, and very good. Perhaps that is a kind of a good cue to bring in Mr. Ashby and Ms. Nichols and see if there's additional responses or additional information that they can provide on the Mayor Pro Tem's question, and just see if there's anything else they want to provide from an information standpoint as well. So, Mr. Ashby, we'll start with you, if you would please. And technically, I'm not opening up the public hearing yet. This will just be in response to questions, and then I'll give you an opportunity in just a minute to express any comments as part of the public hearing. So, Mr. Ashby, any responses to questions that you heard?
Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, members of the council. I apologize for jumping in there. I was going to try to answer that question, but I'm doing it via conference call here. So, to answer just the Mayor Pro Tem's questions, which were great, The first one being, so that would fall underneath the matrix code, which is 05H, and it's employment training, and the national objective would be limited low-mod clientele. So five cities will actually have to income qualify the people that are coming to them that are actually looking to do this program. So it just can't be anybody that's signing up to take these courses and classes to get that licensing. But that will be the national objective that it meets. And I believe you asked a second question regarding, other startup costs. So this category is going to fall underneath, like I said, employment training, which is what CDBG refers to as a quote unquote public service. Once we get into actually giving funds for operations, startup, working capital, it becomes an economic development / kind of business assistance loan program, which is what we're avoiding for a few reasons there that that Ms. Reese laid out for everybody. So it would just be strictly on the training to get to that licensing stage with these funds.
Okay, thank you.
And I have no other nothing else to add on that, Mayor. Just going to answer those questions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you being here with us this evening. So let's see, does Ms. Nichols, was there any specific questions that that you wanted to respond to before making some public comments?
I would. Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. It's a pleasure to be with you this evening. Just a couple of things with regard to Mayor Pro Tem's question about startup costs and licensing. While this particular funding source will get us to the finish line, for example, with our clients, it is our intent with other funding to provide the licensing and startup assistance that they may be requiring. So we have been in touch with Capslo and Five Cities has other unrestricted funds. So we will be ensuring that people who complete the training are actually assisted in starting, in actually finishing the process through the business process. In addition to that, we obviously have put this proposal for the warming center together based on 60 days of operation. In the last couple of years, we've gone from 39 to 69 days. So obviously the operation is somewhat uncertain depending on the weather that comes before us. We have obtained commitments for support from the County of San Luis Obispo and the City of Arroyo Grande. And have a proposal pending with the City of Pismo Beach. And so we are reaching out to other entities. As well as that, we have funding support from two other business entities and unrestricted funds from the local community. That is pretty much my report with regard to these items. I do have a couple of other comments just in terms of other activities. I don't know whether you want it now or later.
Very good. I appreciate that. Perhaps I'll open up the public hearing, and then you can provide those comments on the other programs at that time. So for us, so appreciate the update on these two specific items. And unless there's any other questions from council, I will go ahead and open this up to a public hearing and turn it over to our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line other than Ms. Nichols and Mr. Ashby for public comment on this item.
No, we have no other callers.
Very good. Then I'll turn it back to Ms. Nichols and give her an opportunity to kind of update the city and the council on other programs happening in the Five Cities Homeless Coalition associated with and other programs that you have going. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Just a couple of things. We have a very robust homeless prevention and rental assistance move-in program in partnership with the city through CDBG currently. And one of the reasons we did not apply this evening for funding in those categories is that program is doing swimmingly well and has the funding support necessary. Although I will say we are seeing about a 50% increase currently in the number of calls for assistance, for rental assistance in particular. With that current program, we have served 47 households through eviction prevention and 32 households with deposits. 96-97% of those households are still in housing and are doing quite well. They remain in case management, and we are very pleased with their success. One particular case that I might bring to your attention deals with a gentleman we have just recently housed last month. He was homeless for 3.5 years, had some significant addiction issues. He worked with us very diligently, went through substance abuse treatment, has now been housed, and in fact is celebrating 1 year of sobriety. So we're very pleased with that as an example of many, many families that we have been able to assist in recent months, ranging in age from young homeless youth to folks who are aged and struggling to make ends meet through Social Security, et cetera. So we're very pleased with that. One other comment, as you know, we have purchased a building there in Grover Beach on South 4th Street. We are in the process of finalizing our permitting process with the city and are working at finalizing funding in order to complete some improvements that we hope to complete by later this fall. So with that, I will conclude unless there are any other questions.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Always good to hear from you, and always good to hear the good things and the good programs that are moving forward with the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. So let's see if any of the council members have any questions for you. So just go ahead and wave at me or chime in.
No questions. I just have some comments.
Okay. Very good. So then at this point, I will, unless Mr. Ashby, you wanted to provide any public comment on this item?
No, nothing further from me. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Sonny. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing and bring it back to the council for deliberation and action. So it sounds like Mayor Pro Tem Bright, you had some comments. So we'll start with you, please.
Yes, thank you. Really, I just wanted to just thank the Five Cities Homeless Coalition for being the only shelter in the South County. Just going through the staff report and the information that was provided, some of the things just really, really struck me. How not only do they provide shelter for those who need it, but also how they are able to program people. For example, one story where they were able to help two homeless youths be reunited with their families that were out of state. So they were able to actually be, I guess, rehomed with their families. And they were able to house a veteran who needed shelter. And just stories like that, that I think are just so heartwarming, and they're success stories. And it just, to me, is so important that people understand that they don't just give temporary shelter. They also give people permanent shelter. And I just think it's so important. And I just am so thankful that you are there and that for the work that you do. And the other thing that struck me is that like 41% of those people that were needing shelter were over 50 years old. I mean, it's not just young people that are roaming the streets. These are people who are truly down on their luck or that really need help. So I won't go on and on. I just think that it is just so, the work that you do is so significant. And anyway, thank you so very much for what you do.
There I go. Sorry. Thank you for those comments, Mayor Pro Tem. Let's turn to Councilmember Lance, see if she has any comments.
Thank you. I will just say I'm supportive of both of these pathways. I'm very supportive of initiating training and guidance for licensing for childcare. I read an article a few weeks ago that 50% of private childcare facilities don't expect to still be open by the end of this year if things continue to go the way they do. So we already had a crisis for especially early childhood care in this county, and it's going to be even more significant once people start going back to work fully. They're not going to find childcare for their families. So, yeah, I'm supportive of both. And thank you, Five Cities Homeless Coalition, for all you do. And thank you for what appears to be out of the box with working with CAPSLO on childhood or child care facility training. It's probably in your wheelhouse and I just didn't know it, but I'm thankful that, you know, you're taking the initiative to kind of expand and do more than just to, you know, what people think housing is. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Very good. Next we'll go to Mayor or Councilmember Shaw for any comments.
Yes, I'm just very excited about both proposals, very supportive. I'm really find the childcare one very innovative. And, you know, we, I think, adopted pursuing childcare into our city goals. So this is wonderful. It's great timing to bring us here because this is where we wanted to be anyway. So I'm very excited about that. And I think, as with everything, you know, this COVID crisis is going to affect those that are already poor. And I think a lot of times women or single mothers will be affected. And this is a way that they can create income while still being at home. So that's kind of doubly helpful. So I'm excited about that. And I'm glad that we can help in getting the warming shelter ready. I'll just kind of echo some of the comments that were presented because we discussed some of these things at our recent HSOC meeting. And, you know, I think county and all of us, all of the emergency response teams were doing great with handling COVID as it applied to the homeless when this first started. And then we all kind of took a beat in regard to COVID, thinking that it was getting, we were coming out of the woods. And so a lot of programs ended and they're in the process of getting restarted and getting going. But certain programs like Safe Parking kind of wound down when they probably shouldn't have. And so I think it's really showing a lot of foresight to prepare for the warming center because we're probably not going to look that much different by November. So I'm glad to start preparing for these things. I know we've been very lucky in our homeless community here that we haven't had an outbreak in the shelter, but I do know they've had outbreaks in other counties and only just luckily maybe tested someone and found someone. But if you don't, like in our warming center, without these provisions, it could be a really big problem. So I'm just very supportive of both.
Very good. And I'll just echo the comments of my colleagues in that I'm supportive of this as well. And I just think it's an opportunity that came forward and appreciate staff's willingness to kind of be very proactive on this. And I'm glad that we have an organization like Five Cities Homeless Coalition that had the opportunity and the forthrightness and the willingness to come forward on such short notice as this did have a very short turnaround time. And I think it also speaks to the professionalism of the organization and the trust that they've built in the community to be able to have the warming shelter in a location that had very few, if any, calls for service last year, and working with the LifePoint Church and making sure that they took the concerns of the community and the conditions of approval very much to heart. And I appreciate again, the Five Cities Homeless Coalition for thinking outside the box and just being part of our community. So with that, who is ready to make a motion?
I'll make that motion, Jeff, that we adopt the resolution authorizing the submission of the two 2020 Community Development Block Grant Coronavirus Response Round 1 CBDG CV1 applications for 1, the Winter Warming Center Operation Program, and 2, Childcare Training Licensing Program.
I'll second.
Very good. I think we've got a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Bright and a second by Councilmember Shaw. So, City Clerk Sims, if you would please roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw?
Yes.
Councilmember Lance?
Yes.
Mayor Lee?
And I'm a yes as well. And just for clarification purposes, I did provide just very minor grammatical typo updates to the city manager this afternoon. So nothing of any substance, but he did let me know that they were going to make the changes in the final resolution. So with that, congratulations. We have a program for our CDBG-CV1 applications. And that'll conclude action on that item, and that'll take us to thank you, Ms. Reese, and that'll take us to a regular business item, which is the draft senior center feasibility study. And before I turn it over to the Community Development Director Buckingham, once again, I will remind members of the public who are listening that if you do want to make public comment on this or other items, please call in at 805-321-6639. So with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Buckingham, who I anticipate is going to turn it over to Ms. Reese again.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the City Council. I'm going to turn this over to Associate Planner Reese for a presentation.
Thank you. In 2018, the city was awarded a planning and technical assistance grant from the CDBG program with 2017 funds for the Senior Center feasibility study. In November of 2019, the council awarded the contract to Greenplay LLC to prepare the study. Tonight, the consultant team will be providing an overview of the draft report. The final report will incorporate comments by the council and will return on a future council agenda for formal acceptance. Tom Deal of Greenplay will start the presentation off, providing an overview of the process that we've gone through and the draft study.
Thank you, Janet and Bruce, Mayor Lee and council members. I have Daniel and Matt with me. They'll introduce themselves. We'll try to move quickly for you. I'm not sure if you're looking at our PowerPoint at this time.
Wendy, can PowerPoint, please?
Okay, that's just our introductory slide. You could go to the second slide. This is just showing all the steps that we've taken during the study. We are now at presenting the draft report down on the bottom. We've done the previous steps, and as Janet said, this is an opportunity for us to present our findings and our initial report, and then for the mayor and the council and the city staff to provide any feedback, which will incorporate into a final report that will be returned. You could go to the next slide, please. Just briefly, we did a community center survey, and basically this is the results that 34% of the respondents agreed or strongly agreed that there was a need for a senior center. And these are some of the desired programs that are listed and the desired amenities. And what we did is we took those programs and amenities, and then we looked at different sites in the city and put together our conceptual plans. If you would go to the next slide, please. We looked at four sites: the Grover Beach Community Center, the 16th Street Park, Cleaver Park, and the Ramona Garden Park Center. Those were the four sites that were identified, and our team toured them. Matt, if you'd like to talk here.
Yes, good evening, and thank you again, Mayor Lee and Council. We're very excited to share some of these studies with you. So I just want to touch on the first site that we looked at, which is the Trouville Avenue site. It's approximately 0.6 acres, and there's an existing building there on site, which is around 6 or 7,000 square feet. I'll hand it off to Daniel to show some of the concepts there and floor plans that we came up with.
You could go to the next slide, please. There you are.
Hello, this is Daniel from BRS Architecture. Thank you again. So what we tried to do here at the community center was really try and incorporate as many of the programs as possible while keeping it economically feasible. So in that light, we left essentially the envelope of the building or the perimeter of the building pretty much intact, and left those things that we were considering as high-dollar remodel items, such as bathrooms and kitchens, in their current locations, and creating the multipurpose room in the middle with some circulation to get around to the other functions on the perimeter.
You could go to the next slide, please. Thank you.
So the second site that we looked at was the 16th Street Park site. As you can see on the right-hand side, it's just under 4 acres, and there's no current building there. There are several pump stations and various buildings out there that house the utilities that run through the site.
This site pretty obviously allowed us the most sort of flexibility. So this is the largest of the four options that you will see tonight, and it does include three multi-purpose rooms that can be opened and combined into one. And then number nine at the very top there, what we envisioned was essentially another arts and crafts room, but if we elevated it just a little bit and put another folding partition there, we could use that as a stage when the partition's open.
You'd go to the next slide, please.
And then the third site is the Cleaver Park site. It's a little bit under an acre. Really no building or too much development there. There is a very large oak tree, very nice oak tree there, but that's about it.
On the site, the building itself is essentially a miniature version of what you saw for 16th Street. This one offering only two multi-purpose rooms with that arts and crafts room, and then obviously all of the ancillary functions like administration and lobby, restrooms, and a small counseling room as well.
Next slide, good.
All right, and then last but not least was the Ramona Garden Park Center site, which is a little bit under 2 acres and has a building there currently. As you all know, there is a large hub there for the bus lines and various other transportation services. And there are some park amenities already there, and we do understand that it is currently under a master plan process.
The building itself is both an addition, which is what you see there at the top of the page in yellow, of two multi-purpose rooms, and then a small piece of renovation of the existing building, again trying to keep what we would normally see is sort of higher dollar spaces like kitchens and restrooms in their current location, and then adding additional multi-purpose rooms again up there on the top of the drawing in yellow.
Good go. And so at this point, that was the first part of the study, and then we gathered with the project team from the city and reviewed the options. We did what was called a findings and visioning session. And at that time, we were made aware that Cleaver Park was no longer to be considered an option. And we looked at 16th Street, what we proposed possibly being too large and too costly. So we went back and took a look at 16th Street, the Grover Beach Community Center, and Ramona Garden Park Center. What you're seeing on the slide here is the original projected costs. So we projected for a low cost and a high cost just to get a range. If you'd go to the next slide, please. We also took and put together a comparison matrix so we could compare all the three sites that we were left with, and we looked at things like location, access, site suitability, the building site plan, circulation and parking, and the overall costs. And we determined that 16th Street and the Ramona Garden Park Center were the two best sites. If we did something at 16th Street, it would be a new building and you potentially would gain a lot. If we did an addition at the Ramona Garden Park Center, you'd also potentially have an addition and would gain. If we did something at the current Grover Beach Community Center, you'd have a renovated building, but you wouldn't really be gaining anything. If you'd go to the next slide, please. Matt?
Yes, so looking at the 16th Street Park site a little bit closer, we did find that it's a nice site there in terms of the open field that the building looks out into, and the fact that there are some amenities out there currently. So I'll go down the list there, starting with 15, all the exterior amenities. So 15 being on the left-hand side, the drop-off area there, we did see that maybe having some type of entry plaza or donor plaza would be nice. And then having a potential outdoor activity or game area, kind of building onto the existing picnic area. And I know there's some, I believe, some horseshoe pits out there, you know, so maybe expanding that and bringing in some additional senior services or amenities. And then number 19, we'd be looking at adding some additional parking. There is quite a bit of parking around the perimeter of the park. However, if the facility requires a bit more parking, we did explore that as an option for it. Number 20, of course, the existing restroom, and really through 24 are all the existing amenities that are there today. One that I want to highlight is the existing playground. We do see that as being a nice feature just to look out onto and have that interaction with that senior center. So that kind of summarizes the exterior amenities.
If you'd stay there a second, Daniel will talk about the building itself.
To follow up a little on the site discussion, if you start at number one over on the left, we've associated the vestibule and lobby and entry sequence of the building closest to where we believe the biggest concentration of parking would be. So the accessible path would be smooth and easy into the building. And as you enter the building, number two and three are the lobby and lounge. And the reception desk at number four overlook the entry and also all the way down the hallway. So you have a good visual supervision over the what's happening sort of in the entire building. Number five, directly behind the desk, would be the administration offices. And then moving up in the plan to number six would be a small counseling room where you can do one-on-one or maybe tax preparation that needs to be in private. And then restrooms and general storage moving up to the right of the plan. We started to talk about the multi-purpose rooms. In this iteration, we sort of shrunk it down just a little bit down to two multi-purpose rooms and one arts and crafts room in order to get the budget and the outdoor amenities a little more in alignment with what we were thinking. And then as you move down, number 13, we were envisioning there maybe a catering kitchen that could, of course, serve the multi-purpose rooms, but also when not in use for that purpose, maybe it's open to the lounge and seniors could come in and get a cup of coffee or something like that.
And before you go to the next slide, one other thing to note, Under where we have the legend is still all the field space and everything. So we thought there was nice synergy at this site where you could have a senior center and still a lot of outdoor activity. If you'd go to the next slide, please. Matt?
All right. So looking at the Ramona Garden Park Center site, starting with the exterior amenities again at number 13, we did perceive that the really an area there on the right-hand side of the building could be a drop-off area, and it allows a bit more access to where the building would really kind of grow out into the park and the senior facilities would occur. So building on that, we looked at extending the patio there and having maybe some type of outdoor gathering space. You can set tables out there and have some functions there that relate to the building. And then moving a little bit left there over to the I believe dry stream bed is a what we're talking about, kind of a lithomosaic plaza, which is a little bit more of a artful plaza speaking to that water cycle. So there is some possibility to do something, you know, that adds a little bit of public art to that space, knowing that it is a bit more center and there's a few visitors and activities there. And then looking a little bit north of that is where we'll maybe look at having some outdoor activities. Again, maybe some senior related activities such as, you know, I can look at pickleball or other sports courts there that could be augmented into the current canvas of the park. And then the other amenities are existing, but that of course is the drop-off bus area, as well as the outdoor plaza that's just left of the building, and then the existing amphitheater.
On the building, just for frame of reference, the areas in white or that are not colored are imagined to be existing spaces, and then the areas that are in color are either some kind of upgrade renovation or building addition itself. So if we start at the bottom of the page at number one, again, that's where you would enter the building in a vestibule into the lobby and the reception desk that would be built there. And then to the left, you have an existing multi-purpose room. And then to the right, those restrooms we're imagining would stay in place. So those are 12 and 9, respectively. Directly above that, you already have an existing kitchen. So we're, again, imagining that would stay in its place. And we would add amenities such as the small counseling room at number 5. Maybe the lounge, instead of being directly associated with the lobby, moves a little bit further back and is associated with the new multi-purpose room, and that's number 6. And then as you reach sort of the larger addition to the building, number 7, we're seeing that again as a couple multi-purpose rooms with a divider wall or a movable partition in the middle that could be separated into two or joined into one large space.
And before you go to the next slide, we are aware that there is a master plan in progress for the Ramona Garden Park Center, and all of this would have to work in unison with that. If you would go to the next slide. So we prepared and we have more details in the actual report, but for the slide itself, we prepared some potential costs. You can see we've got a high and a low. And then if you go to the next slide, we took a look at the potential operating costs, and it is pretty minimal compared to what we see in a lot of other facilities. You could actually recover the majority of your expenses. And at this time, we'd like to see if you had any questions. And everything is in more detail in the report itself.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for that presentation and for that information. It took a lot of the elements of the report and brought it together into a very understandable presentation. So I appreciate that. Let's see if there's any questions from the council. I will turn it over to Councilmember Shaw first to see if she has any questions.
Yeah, thank you. I have just a couple. I read through the report. I appreciated it. I like the picture of my mom and dad in there. They went to one of the sessions. So one thing I saw in a lot of responses in the reports that they would be interested in a pool, a swimming pool. But I noticed the design didn't include a pool. Was that just because there wasn't enough space?
I think it was a combination of what was available on the sites and some of the information we had heard from the project team from the city, knowing the cost of operating a pool. And I think the direction we were sent was not to include that.
Okay. And then I think you said this in the report, but I just want to make sure I heard right. So the plan that includes Ramona, you would still be able to use Ramona for its current uses. These would just be adding on. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. We were giving you more spaces to meet what we heard to be the needs of the seniors in the community.
Okay. And then one thing I saw in the report, and I kind of just want it out there for the community, it was kind of a low percentage or a lower percentage than I thought of people who actually responded that they want a senior center. And I think these designs are beautiful, but could you put those numbers out for the public? Because not everyone even expressed that they wanted it.
Yes, I think they're in the report. We'll do whatever you'd like in our revision to the report. And I think we looked at, this could be solely a senior center, or you could also use it somewhat multi-generational if that would be beneficial.
Okay. Yeah, I'm having trouble just putting my finger on it from the report, but I think it was maybe less than half of people that actually were adamantly saying they wanted it. So it was just something, I really like your suggestion that maybe we should look at it in a more multi-generational way, possibly. So those were my only questions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Councilmember Shaw. And I think I remember seeing it somewhere on the 30 to 35% range of people who were really looking for just a senior center. But before I go to Councilmember Lance for questions, there will be an opportunity for the public to speak on this item. So if you did want to call in, you can call in now at 805-321-6639, and you'll get in the queue with our city clerk and our deputy city clerk, and that we'll get you on the line here momentarily. But let's go to Councilmember Lance, see if she has any questions.
Thank you. And just a follow up comment to what Councilmember Shaw and Mayor Lee were talking about. Not only was that a lower than half that I read as far as interest in a community senior community center, but also a lot of the input was from non-River Beach residents. So that's just something to think of. My question, and it's more of maybe just providing a little bit more elaboration, is kind of what happens after a senior center is, let's say it's something that we are very passionate about and we build it and we find the funds and it all comes together beautifully. What does it look like as far as an operations standpoint? Who operates it? What are the mechanicals of that? Or are we even at that point to discuss that? I think just having a general idea would be beneficial for my processing.
Council member, we discussed that with the Grover Beach staff, specifically with Kathy. Our understanding, the way we put together the operation and maintenance budget, is that Kathy's staff would manage that type of facility and program it. And there was, we put together a operational budget, but it was a minimal cost to the city. You were recovering the majority of your expenses. Again, it's a relatively small in square foot facility, but I think in talking with Kathy, there'd be pretty good usage. And I did look while you were talking, 34% of the respondents agreed or strongly agreed. 26% didn't really have an opinion. But that isn't all in the report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. So, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, any questions?
No questions. It was a very thorough report. A little disappointing in the response, in the responses, but no, it was a very good report. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. I just had one question, and I'm not sure if it's for our consultant team or for staff, so I'll ask it and see who wants to respond. Is in the conversation of usage of the facility, obviously the existing facilities either are, if we're bursting at the seams, do we have an opportunity or do we have a need for additional square footage space, realizing we're going to have more programs and so forth associated with senior. But is there a need in the Five Cities area, not just Grover Beach, but for a facility like this? Obviously, we've got a conference center at the end of Grand Avenue that is not coming out of the ground in the near future, based upon our discussions with the state. So, is this an opportunity to find a multi-use or multi-generational center? As I forget which one of my colleagues mentioned it, I think it was Miriam. So I don't know if that's a question that that Mr. Deal you want to kind of tackle, or if that goes to Ms. Petker or to Mr. Bronson.
I can tell you from the work we do with our team here around the country that we do try to design these types of facilities that could be multi-generational. The focus here was definitely a senior center, but it is designed in such a way that it could be multi-generational. I don't think that if you went with either of the designs that you'd end up with a facility that would just sit vacant. And we do find that, you know, the way Daniel's team had designed this, that there's nice synergy, and a lot of times we find that both seniors and young people enjoy using the facility and it works out well. Kathy, did you have anything to add?
Looks like Ms. Petker, you have your hand raised. So thank you for using the hand raise button. So go ahead and unmute yourself.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Thank you. So you've all touched on the key words of the importance of a facility and the intergenerational component. So no matter facility we use, the fact that if we have an existing facility that is retrofitted to have a senior center component, it will be an asset to our community. It'll be intergenerational. It's one of those buildings that if you build it, they will come. And not only for River Beach, but also for the Five Cities. So some of the most successful senior centers / community centers that I've come across in the whole country have been the ones that include the staff offices component, the wing for the seniors and older adults, as well as the active classes and the upstairs weight room. Those types of things where one building brings everyone in are the most popular. And specifically when the older adults have their own wing. So they know that this is the big Reader Digest book area, this is the painting room, those types of things. The energy in those buildings, you can't say in a meeting, you have to be in it to feel the community energy that's happening in those buildings. So I really like the designs of the two buildings, that either one that's retrofitted, we can program in both. So
I'm not sure if Kathy's mic dropped off or if she had concluded her comments. So let's see. I don't think we have any other questions for staff. So I'll open this up to the public, see if there's any members of the public on the line. And I'll just say that as we're bringing people in, if you do have comments, please call 805-321 6639. And I'll turn it over to City Clerk Sims and see if we have anyone who wanted to make comment on this item.
We currently have no one on the line.
Very good. Then I'll go ahead and close public comment for this item, bring it back, and maybe a question for for the city manager is, where do we go next with the senior design study? Obviously, we're going to, or the facility feasibility study, realizing we're going to come back with a full report or a finalized report. But what is the opportunity going forward, monetarily, or do we need to kind of focus on a particular strengths of one of the locations, or what does staff need from us tonight?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Let me first start off and just thank the consultant team, Greenplay, and their team of sub-consultants. They did a great job on this report. They are a nationally known team that has designed centers all around the country. Talking to them earlier, they were designing centers, I think, in Grand Forks, North Dakota is one of them, and other communities as well. So I want to just take a moment and thank them for the work that they've done. They've given us a lot of really good information, great schematics. This is a very exciting study when we're at the point of being able to consider the next steps with what could be a multi-million dollar investment in our community facilities. And so to the mayor's point, the main action that's before the council this evening is really to provide input and direction on anything that the council would want to see change in the report, updated in the report, prior to finalizing it and sending it back to you for acceptance. A few years ago, we did a similar process with an economic development strategy funded by a CDBG grant, where we also had a similar presentation of economic development to really help captivate what could be done as the city continues to move forward. So in some cases, there may not be immediate actionable items coming forward. Unless the council wishes to provide direction for us to begin planning for a multi-million dollar facility right now in our capital improvement budget. That's a policy decision of the council, of course. I think as staff, we would say this is good information for us to have in the mix of looking at our capital needs. And as we go forward with our budget process over this next year, see where we are with COVID, this could be something that we put more in the discussion for upcoming CIPs as we go forward. And really, I think looking at the core question of a senior center versus a multi-generational center, to the point of several council members, having an additional facility, a modern state-of-the-art facility that is not Camp Roberts Barracks put together into a community center, is a worthy question for the council to consider as we go forward over this coming year. So I think as staff, that's where we would suggest is that this is really about, is there anything the council would want to see different in the report? And then if so, we'll finalize it, bring it back to you, and to know that this is ready for us to consider as we go forward and looking at our needs long-term.
Very good, thank you for that summarization. So making up words on the spot here. So I'll start with Councilmember Shaw, see if there's any changes or any specific information that you wanted to add.
I just really liked the idea of maybe it being more multi-generational. So I don't know if that needs to be worked into the report. And I would like the idea of at least the possibility of a pool being in there, and maybe it's something obviously we can weigh down the line, but it seems like with these things, once we have the plan, then maybe we could pursue a grant, you never know. So if this is really going to happen and we somehow get grant funded, I think we should try to get a pool also. But I really appreciated Ms. Petker's comments about the synergy that can come from multi-generational facilities. They built one like this in my old hometown in Ohio, and everyone goes there from young to old, and it's just the center of everything especially because it snows like 9 months out of the year. So it's definitely like you got to go indoors, but it's still just there is that energy. So I would love to see us have that someday, but maybe with a pool, indoor or outdoor.
Very good. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Lance.
Honestly, Councilmember Shaw said the exact same things I was going to say. I don't know if it's outside the scope of what we can include in the senior feasibility study based on what was, you know, what was funded and that scope, but it would be nice to have a multi-generational element included in the report if it fits within that scope. And also, I would like to also see the opportunity for a pool. You know, it's not something I'd want to take off the table completely, especially if you're undertaking a huge project like this. And that's it. I would just encourage staff to continue, and I think you always do this, just to continue looking at grant opportunities, because it could be something comes along our path where there's a certain significant amount that we can tap into, and then maybe that generates additional funding or interest or donations or who knows what. So that's all. Thanks.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. I don't really have anything else to add to that. I love the idea of multi-generation facility. And, of course, a pool. I mean, if you can have a pool, who wouldn't want a pool? So that's really all I have to say.
Very good. And my comments are going to echo the comments of my colleagues. So just that, multi-generational opportunities obviously are, I think, what we're seeing from just a community standpoint. And just taking a look at the design and the concept for 16th Street Park, where, I mean, that turns it into a complete park. In my eyes, it becomes a young park, an old park, a sports park, and a family park. And if we took out the pickleball court and put in a pool, it becomes a pool park. So from that perspective, the elements that can be added into the report, if that is something that can be accomplished, I just want to add my thanks to it as well. And Mr. Deal, I'll let you respond to that.
Yes, and all I was going to say is that we'll make the adjustments that you'd like, and once we do provide you with the final report, we don't consider ourselves truly done. We really do consider you a client for life. So we understand that this isn't something you're going to decide next month and you know, do right away. So we're around in the future if you have questions, and you know, 6 months from now or a year from now, you're looking at the report and have questions, you just reach out to us and we'll help you out as much as we can.
And I definitely want to say thank you to that component as well, because obviously a senior center or any type of center that becomes a component is going to become a larger project in the CIP world, as Mr. Bronson mentioned. I think from that perspective, it really becomes a legacy project for the city itself. And I think that's an opportunity that we will tackle at some point in the future. But I think at the moment, this study, while it was announced as a senior center feasibility study, I think has gone well beyond the realm of that in a very good way. And I appreciate staff's work on this, our consultant team's work, and the ideas and the energy that you brought to this. So with that, I'll wrap up those comments and see if City Manager Bronson, was there one more thing you wanted to add on this item?
No, sir. We heard the council direction loud and clear, and we will work with our consultants to reflect that in the final report that comes forward to you. We were bringing forward the culmination of this particular grant project and, I think, opening up a new door for a possible center down the road. So we thank you again. Thanks to council, and thanks to the consultant team for your great work on this project. And, of course, our staff team as well.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you, everyone.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so that does conclude our business on that item this evening. Let me just turn it over to the council, see if there's anyone who's in need of a break. Just wave at me if you need to. Seeing nobody raising their hands, we will go ahead and go on to item number 8, which is an update on our street rehab or rehabilitation projects. As I introduce our Public Works Director, City Engineer Ray, I will remind people that if you do want to call on this item, make public comment, please dial in at 805-321-6639. And Mr. Ray, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, Honorable Mayor and City Council. Hopefully you can hear me fine.
Yes.
And assuming you can, great, thank you. I'd like to, first of all, thank you for introducing the item. We are tonight presenting some information on street rehabilitation projects, in particular looking at sort of two different components, local streets and major streets, and also looking at some components of our local street program, which is primarily funded by a major case. So next slide, please. Wendy, next slide. Oh, there's, we got it. Okay, good. There we go. So this is the sixth year of our major K-14 local street rehabilitation work, funded by the bonds passed in 2014. The city's completed 9 projects, and the 10th project will go out to bid in September. So really 10 projects that consist of multiple blocks in the range of 10 to 20 blocks per project. 9 projects have provided maintenance and repair of over 200 city blocks, or almost 50% of the local streets included in the Measure K program. The city has issued $28 million in bonds so far and invested about $4 million a year from the Measure K-14 funds to achieve this result, approaching 50% of local streets. Next slide. This is an example. It's a photo looking west on Newport. And here you can see the recently repaved street, the beautiful smooth pavement, the striping, and a unique feature, the protected bike lane. Also, you see the bulb outs that provide pedestrian safety enhancements. This is truly a feature street in the city now and just part of the Measure K program. Next slide. We are in the design phase for pavement rehabilitation and pedestrian and bicycle safety improvements on portions of West Grand Avenue, South Oak Park Boulevard, and North 4th Street. That's in our major street program. We're also looking at vehicle lane modifications and bike and pedestrian enhancements at South Oak Park and Grand Avenue, which should be out to bid in early fall. The pavement rehabilitation project on South Oak Park is anticipated to begin in fiscal year 21-22, and that will go out to construction once final design and traffic studies are completed. There is, however, a lack of funding for major streets. If you look at funding for major streets, we've historically spent an average of about $327,000 per year on them versus the $4 million per year we've been expending on local streets included in the Measure K program. Staff has estimated the cost to rehabilitate all major streets is over $10 million. And there is little funding allocated beyond that which council recently allocated to South Oak Park Boulevard. So I think it's clear that additional funding is needed either through a sales tax measure or some other source. Looking at pedestrian enhancements, specifically as they relate to the Measure K program, we're aware, and I'm sure the council is aware, that the city faces an ongoing challenge of sidewalk improvements that are needed to improve pedestrian access throughout the city. We've historically avoided sidewalk improvements just because of the cost, but most recently with the Measure K program, we have added about 2 miles of sidewalks or pathways with the Measure K program in the last 5 years. The estimated average cost for a block with pavement rehabilitation only is $125,000. That cost increases to $200,000 per block once sidewalk infill is included. At this time, staff is estimating that there is insufficient funding to continue funding both street rehabilitation plus sidewalk infill with the Measure K-14 bond funding. To offset that funding gap, staff has been applying for grants. An example would be the Safe Routes to School grant the city received for sidewalk infill near the Grover Beach Elementary School. And that project will begin this fiscal year. Again, there is a need for additional funding from the general fund or other sources to continue to fund pedestrian and bicycle enhancements along with Measure K funds. Looking at really near-term upcoming projects, you have in your staff report, I believe this is attachment 1, you'll see that staff has continued to implement council policy direction on prioritization. If you look at this map, you'll see that the completed streets are in green. That's roughly 50% of streets that are now done. Remaining council identified priority streets are shown in red. And also this project shows projects that are currently under design or construction in blue. And then you'll see some circles on the projects, and the dashed circles represent the CDBG-funded waterline projects that have been completed. The dark circles represent CDBG-funded waterline projects that will begin next fiscal year. Table 1, which is in your staff report, identifies these upcoming projects that have previously been identified and prioritized by Council. We have two projects, Phase 10 and Phase 11. I will note that the projects are taken out of order, and that was really to address the completion of the CDBG project. So Phase 11, which consists of North 14th Street, North 8th, South 14th, South 9th, is under design, and we anticipate will be out to bid in September. That includes 16 blocks of work at an estimated cost of $3.2 million, and this project does include sidewalk infill. Phase 10, again out of order, is 22 blocks and includes portions, we've actually added portions of Seabright, Manhattan, Trouville, and cul-de-sacs, which were part of the CDBG waterline project to make sure that those projects that were trenched for that waterline are getting paved. Next slide, please. Staff is seeking Council direction and input on the next set of Measure K 14 streets to be completed over the next several years. Staff has developed a proposed project list, and we did that with guidance from Council's priority list back in 2018. We also looked at locations of future underground utility repairs to try to avoid those in cases where they haven't been done yet, but also looking at the future CDBG project and timing projects behind that. We took guidance from the city's pavement management system, which provides information on the condition of the streets and when they do need to be repaired. And we also looked at opportunities to rehabilitate an entire street. And by that, I mean sort of from east-west boundary of the city or north-to-south boundary of the city, or at least from West Grand or one major street to another, instead of just isolated and individual blocks throughout the city. Table 2 identifies those projects where we're seeking Council direction and is really staff's recommendation on the next four project phases, phases 12 through 15. I'll add some kind of information on this. These projects were grouped into streets that had similar PCI values, that's their pavement condition index. And the important point there to note is that we're looking to try to have the most cost-effective projects. So we're trying to do projects that are similar in nature. So a group of projects, say for example, phase 12, the work is full pavement rehabilitation on every one of these blocks identified. And so I can go through these individually, but I imagine Council will be coming back to this for more discussion at some point. Later on in the report, I'd be happy to answer any questions on this. So kind of looking at each of these and keeping in mind that these are projects that are similar in scope. They're intended to try to address large sections of a street, if not the complete street from end to end. And the projects are also sized in a manner that we think we can manage with existing staff and current workloads and try to deliver projects on a regular basis. Next slide, please. So again, staff is seeking Council concurrence on what you see in Table 2, or that matter, additional direction with the next set of street repair projects. Pending Council direction, staff intends to begin design of Phase 10, and that would start this fiscal year after the start of construction of Phase 11. Again, if you recall, those are out of order. Staff is also reviewing street conditions citywide, and we're going to be developing a citywide street maintenance project that will extend the life of streets currently in fair condition. You might remember we did one of those projects a few years back. It primarily consists of slurry seals and restriping. And that is really coming out of our pavement management system, where we need to do these light maintenance projects to extend the life of these streets well beyond 20 years, hopefully out to 50 years and more. Staff intends to provide a recommended project to Council for approval this fall, and we anticipate the construction could begin by the end of the calendar year. So with that, I'll turn it back to council. I presume we'll be talking about a selection of streets. And Wendy, it might be good to turn back to table 2 in the presentation. And thank you, council, for your participation this evening.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Ray. Appreciate that presentation. So let's turn it over to the council for questions first. Let's start with Councilmember Shaw.
Yeah, thank you. I just had a couple questions. So this proposed list that's on the screen, this is what the order you would be proposing in doing them now. You would only want to hear from us if we like wanted to change something or add something. Is that right?
Mayor, if I may?
Of course.
So this is the order that we're recommending. Primarily as it relates to the CDBG funded project, although I think I would admit that, you know, there could be some reshuffling of this. And the other thing is that there may be a block or two that council would like to see done, even though it's a random block, say somewhere in the city, that council would like to see done in conjunction with one of these projects. So that would be also a recommendation the council might make.
Okay. And then my other question is, I was kind of comparing the map diagram to this list, and it seems like you still have more council recommended streets after this. So you still haven't covered all of the ones we recommended, right? We're just working through the list.
That's correct. I mean, it's working through the list along with some streets that aren't on the list. And there's a reason for that in some cases. There are pending underground utility projects on some of those. And it's primarily related to pending underground utilities and also just in particular to the condition of the streets. They may not fit into the type of work recommended in each of these four project phases.
Okay. And just this is my last question. One thing I worry about early on, we kind of avoided doing some streets that just had a really bad PCI because we said, well, they're not going to necessarily get much worse and we want to save streets that can be salvaged. For example, I was just looking at our recommended streets in the industrial zone, like Griffin Street. And so my concern is with budget and everything, have you budgeted for the fact that, yes, we're 50% through streets, but some of these toward the end are really bad streets? Is that worked into the plan so that we don't come out very short on money?
It is. We're using the pavement management system to provide the estimates. So it takes into account the anticipated deterioration of the street over a period of time. So, I mean, we believe we're looking pretty good right now at 50%. And if I will remind Councilmember Shaw that we're kind of doing what we call the blended approach now. This was adopted back in 2015, I believe, where we're not strictly following the pavement management system in terms of just doing streets that are ready to go right now, but we're also picking up a handful of those fully deteriorated streets along the way.
Okay, thank you. That's all my questions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those questions. Next, we'll turn over to Councilmember Lance for any questions.
Thank you. I do not have any questions, just comments for when we discuss.
Very good. Then we'll turn over to Mayor Pro Tem Bright and see if she has any questions.
Thank you. Just a couple. So I'm really just curious about the streets that haven't had any work done and don't look like they have any priority or that sort of thing. So, for example, like Fifth Street, I mean, it's had like maybe 3 blocks of work have been done. Now, I know that they had some infrastructure work done, and but it's been completed. And then Sixth Street, They've had some work done in the south part of the city. So is that because the streets are in relatively good shape, or is it a combination of issues? Can you tell me?
I mean, I think if we were narrowing that question down to a couple of particular blocks, I could probably give you an answer in terms of, you know, maybe it's not ready to be done yet, or it doesn't fit into a particular project category. I think what I would say is that, you know, looking back at how did we select this group, and where do we go from here after this group gets done? You know, we were really looking at, we definitely wanted to repave projects where the water lines were already put in, and we definitely want to catch, after the next phase of water lines go in, we want to catch those streets next. So that added some priority to those in terms of staff selection. We looked at the council's priority list, which are, you know, there's a larger map in the background somewhere. You know, if council remember that larger list that we've been keeping over the years. And so we're trying to pick those off, and, you know, as well as do entire blocks. But I would say in general, we are working off the council priority list to a great extent and the CDBG waterline list. There's a lot more work to be done. You know, we're only about 50% of the way through. And I think you would see, as we've done here tonight, identifying four phases, you know, for the next several years in the future, a year or so, 2 years down the road, we'll take another look at it and get more council input on where do you want to go next and start putting together, you know, maybe even another priority list to, because we'll really, by and large, knocked off all those streets on the list.
Okay. So, like, well, I guess Trouville's had some, has a portion of some water, two water issues, I guess, or some infrastructure work. Okay. Right. Just looks like 6th Street, I mean, from, my gosh, from Trouville all the way north, nothing. And I just wonder why. Anyway, okay, that's a question.
Well, council's working through this. I'll take a look on my map of projects, and I'll take a look and see if I can give you, like, for example, specifically on 6th Street, I can come back to you with an answer on that.
That'd be swell. I mean, I'm just wondering, I'm sure people might be wondering why 6th Street hasn't had any rehab at all past Trouville North. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that was just a question. I was just wondering, it just kind of stuck out. Then my last question is regarding the, when you start to do the maintenance of the streets. So you'll be then taking a look at basically the streets that I guess are now in green, the completed projects?
Not specifically. I mean, those most have been completed so recently that we should not need to look at them, but, you know, we certainly will. We're really looking at really streets that are hovering around the high 50s to 70 PCI range that are starting to show signs of surface rattling and really need to have that evaporation of the material in the pavement halted.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the green streets, sure, but by and large, probably not.
I mean, I'm not talking about the ones that we just did with the Measure K, but I know that there are some that, but you're just going to be looking at the ones that have been fairly recently, probably not Measure K streets, but ones that have been done and are just starting to kind of show some wear and tear to make sure that they're maintained so they don't start to deteriorate.
That's correct. Probably in the range of 7 to 10 year old paving on those streets.
Very good. Okay, excellent. And I think those are my questions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those. I just have one or two quick questions. If we're on table two here, those, whoops, actually, sorry about that. With table two, is this the level of streets, and you may have said this in your presentation, but I just want to confirm, is this the streets that we can do under our existing bond release that I know we've got approximately $8 or $9 million left in our current bond issuance. So would that get us through these, or would we need to do another issuance to accomplish these remaining five projects if we go 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, six projects?
Interesting. I hadn't considered that, but I believe just looking at the numbers, we should be able to achieve these.
Yes. Okay. Very good. And so then from that perspective, I'll call it the intermediate or the rehabilitation project later this fall, is that coming out of these proceeds as well? So we still have enough funding for what size project do you think that'll be in the fall?
The light maintenance project?
The light maintenance project, yes, thank you.
Yes. You know, I don't really have a number. I would estimate somewhere around $1 million, $1.5 million.
Okay. So a decent size project to perhaps I don't know if we look on the north side of Atlantic City, there's obviously Ocean View and Margarita that kind of stick out. I think Nacimiento is going to be a much larger rehabilitation project, but there's a couple projects there, a couple streets there that might fall into the light maintenance, and then we'll look forward to the overall light maintenance efforts in the fall. So, and then just one clarification question from what Councilmember Shaw mentioned is, the original intent of Measure K-14 was not to construct sidewalks with those funding. And so I know wherever possible we've had other funding sources, whether it's Safe Route to Schools or general funds or LTF funds or some other city funds. And it's always been staff's, and maybe this is a hypothetical question that you can answer yes or no to, it's always been staff's course to not use K-14 funds for sidewalks whenever possible, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Very good. I appreciate that. So that's all my questions. And so City Manager, was there anything that you wanted to add before we go out to the public?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council Members. Just a few points to add. Thank you, Greg, for your presentation. I think this, whenever you have a streets item, you always open up to what's been done, but also the significant needs we still have. Any map shows a lot of colors, meaning streets that we've completed or streets that are designed, but also a number of streets that are still in need of being repaired. And we're keenly aware of that. We're year six into what was promise as a 25-year program. Now, we think we're on track for completing it in fewer than 25 years, but still, we're in year six of a two-decades-long program as it was presented to the voters in 2014. So we're making significant progress, but there's a lot of additional streets that are needed to be repaired. We believe that wholeheartedly. You know, I think tonight is really about being transparent about what's currently in the queue, what the council's directed, but also some suggestions on what's next based on, one, the priorities from 2018 that the council identified, picking the streets that you felt, the council felt at that time, were important, and two, the CDBG improvements, so that we're making sure that we have the facility utility work done first, and then we can do the street paving after that. So that's been the major focus tonight. Again, council can update this list. The list on table two, it is a council-directed list. We're suggesting these streets based on your staff's recommendation, but these are streets the council ultimately is asked to weigh in on and affirm or modify based on your priorities this evening. And then lastly, to Councilmember Shaw's point, I think if there are other streets you want us to be monitoring and putting on a future list, this is an opportunity to suggest those so that we are cognizant of those. As we go forward and develop the next-to-next list, we want to be aware of what streets are on the council's mind for us to focus on as staff. And then we'll bring the light maintenance project to you this fall, including the PCI levels. I think that's a good piece of information that we'll make sure to bring to the council this fall as part of that item. And lastly, just underscore that we don't have money for major streets, as the council is aware. This is about K-14 streets. We have the major streets that we're also working on in tandem with this, and we're dealing with those significant funding challenges as a council is aware. Thank you.
Very good. I appreciate those comments. And so let me turn it over to Mayor Pro Tem Bright. Looks like she's got her hand raised, so she may have another question.
Thank you. I did just have one question that, speaking about the sidewalks, and that is on table two, in each one of these projects, 12 through 15, the estimated cost, it says design and construction for paving only. So am I to take it to mean that that does not include sidewalks?
That is a correct interpretation.
Thank you.
Very good. And Mr. Ray, it looks like you have your hand raised as well. So was there something else that you wanted to add?
I did. I wanted to answer the question from Councilmember Shaw with regard to North 6th. And so I looked at the background maps that I have in front of me on another screen here. There's no utility work on it. So it looks like really, why isn't North 6th selected? It just hasn't been on the council priority list yet.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. That was me,
Karen. Oh, that was your question. I apologize.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Very good. And I'm really liking this hand-raising thing, by the way, too. So with that, not seeing any other questions pop up, I will go ahead and open this up to the public. I did hear from our city clerk that we didn't have anybody on the line, but if there is anyone listening out there, I'll ask them to please call in at 805-321-6639, and I'll just confirm with our city clerk that no one has joined us to have public comment on this item.
No, there is no one on the line.
Very good. Thank you for that. So we will close it and bring it back to the council for kind of discussion and direction. So let's start with the Mayor Pro Tem.
Well, thank you. I think that I've received all the information that I need, and I'm quite comfortable with the direction that we're taking. So I don't think I have anything else to add to the next street projects. I'm glad to hear that we're not going to be including any more sidewalks unless there's some particular project that we'll hear about later on. So I think I'm fine with how we're headed, where we're going. Thank you.
Very good. Next we'll go to Councilmember Lance for comments and suggestions.
Thank you. I'm also supportive of staff's recommendation, especially with the length of the projects as far as consistency across many blocks. I'll tell you, I scooter a lot with my three-year-old, and we always do 8th Street to Long Branch because they're the longest, smoothest sidewalk-filled stretches, so it's nice to be able to have those long stretches for things like that. So I am supportive of trying to use our resources to make that happen. And I think the background information provided by staff, you know, a combination of council priority, utility work, PCI index or pavement condition index, PCI numbers, all make sense. And I think that's the way to go as far as choosing what next streets are, not just one factor, but a kind of collection of factors. So I'm supportive of this proposal.
Very good. Thank you. Councilmember Shaw.
Yes, I would echo the other comments. I think that staff put a lot of thought into choosing how to lay these streets out, using PCI numbers, using our policy direction from years and years. So I would hesitate to really try to tinker with that. I know everyone wants their street done ASAP, message received times a million. And I think if someone had called in tonight, maybe that would sway my comments. But I did share this on my social media also, asking for people, and I know our city manager shared. So, you know, I think you're all in the best driver's seat to kind of lay out the next directions, and I agree. And I know I've always been a big proponent of sidewalks, but if we can't afford them, we can't afford them on certain things, and please don't hesitate to tell me that. I promise I won't blame you, but that's then up to the rest of us and to figure out how to fund it. But we definitely want to get through all of the streets with these funds. And I also just want to, while I have a chance, thank the public works staff and all our staff, because even during this COVID crisis, you haven't missed a beat with street repairs and street improvements. And I know there was one question or comment on some social media platform saying, oh, what's happened with street repairs? What's happened is they've kept moving right along, and maybe some have been more in the design phase, so it wasn't as visible for the public. So I just want people to know that our staff's been working really nonstop on this, and it's been moving forward as we're seeing tonight. So just thank you, everyone.
Very good, and I'll echo all those comments as well, that I think we've got a series of street programs that get us through the funding that we have currently issued, which is helpful. And then also leads us to a couple years out from a perspective of work program. So perhaps we revisit this as necessary. But from an aspirational standpoint, I guess as I'm wont to do in some instances, is we have heard or I've been walking around and talking to the public, I think Trouville is one of those streets that that does come up and creep up on the list for becoming a kind of our South County street in need of a full rehabilitation. I know a couple of people that live on Ocean View that keep chirping in my ear, so that that their portion of Ocean View hasn't been done yet. So it's always good to provide that opportunity, and perhaps that's part of the light maintenance program. So, but I think the I'll just end on the fact that we've got a great opportunity here to continue with the program, but to echo the city manager's comments earlier. While we don't have a funding source for major street improvements, we also don't have a long-term maintenance funding source for these streets either. And I think as we were going forward with the Measure K14 program, we knew that, and we kind of reiterated that at some point we will need a funding source for maintenance of these streets that we that 20, 30, 40 years from now we don't find ourselves in the same spot where we have to do another bond type of issuance there. But I think we've come a long way. I think our residents are happy. I think our housing prices and our housing values are appreciative of this, as is the community. And I think that'll be the culmination of my comments, unless there's anyone else that wants to add anything, either Mr. Ray or Mr. Bronston, at the to summarize all this up. See if you've got any additional questions or direction of us. Mr. Ray, I see your hand raised.
Just one quick comment. I understood that there was a social media post about, you know, why have we stalled, and I'd like to point out, I think that we took a unique approach to one project in particular that actually accelerated the pace beyond what we expected. So we've seen a gap in work because we got the project done so early. Really, you'd still see work going on, or you'd see a very small gap if it weren't for that. So we're always looking for ways to accelerate the pace of this. Unfortunately, the COVID issue, you know, is causing some challenges, but I appreciate the comments, and we're trying our best to maintain the pace and, you know, not let our foot off the throttle, just so you know.
And I'll just add to that, just thank the council for your comments, and thank our public works staff on the engineering and maintenance side. They have put in a tremendous amount of time and effort into a thoughtful street repair program that delivers on the expectations to the voters. And we are doing just that. We will continue to move these forward and look forward to the happy sounds of jackhammers and asphalt ripping machines later on this calendar year, the sounds of progress, as we like to say.
Very good. Progress away. So with that, we will close discussion on item number 8. And unless there's someone in need of a break, not seeing anybody waving at me in need of a break, so we'll go ahead and continue on to item 9, which is placement of a sales tax measure on the November 2020 ballot. City Manager Bronson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council Members. As City Clerk Sims is bringing up the presentation slides, I'll just say that I have a very brief presentation deck this evening. What's before the Council on next slide is consideration of placing a sales tax measure on the November 2020 ballot. As you recall, back on June 22nd, the Council did provide direction for us to move forward with such a measure to consider. This follows several council discussions back on May 4th, and really earlier in this calendar year, we've talked about our financial projections, what our ability to fund is, and what opportunities we have and unmet needs we're facing. I'll note that this is really the last scheduled council meeting to take action on such a measure, as the Elections Office is asking for these materials at the end of July, early August, so this is the action before the council. And then just to underscore that the council's role is to place the measure on the ballot. The voters' role is to decide if this is a worthy investment to make in the community. If the voters approve such a measure, the council will come back and actually adopt the draft ordinance that's before you this evening. So again, the council's role is to consider placement of the measure on the ballot. So going forward to the next slide, we see the overview of what's before you. Again, the measure would add a 1% transaction and use tax, commonly known as a sales tax for cities, that would generate just under $2 million a year in annual funding to help fund community needs. We currently have a rate of 7.75%. This includes predominantly the statewide rate of 7.25%, plus our existing 1.5% rate approved by voters in 2006. Our rate right now is similar to every other city in this county, and all these rates are lower than our neighboring counties, Monterey County and Santa Barbara County, and for reference in particular, Santa Maria has a rate of 8.75%. The average cost per household is estimated at $16 per month, and again, this is household, not per person, and roughly 40% of the revenues for our sales taxes are generated by visitors coming into our community, traveling on our roads, using our services, and coming in and visiting our community. I'll note for reference that sales tax measures are being contemplated and moving forward in four different cities across the county. Last week, Morro Bay and Atascadero actually placed measures on the ballot in their communities. Pismo Beach is considering and has placed a TOT measure on their ballot, while City of Rio Grande last week declined to put a measure, sales tax measure, on the ballot this fall. I will note that we've had frequent and substantial conversations with the chamber about not just unmet community needs, but how this measure may be part of the mix and making sure we are hearing from the business community as part of this process. We've talked at several chamber steering committee meetings. I've talked with Jocelyn Brennan, the chamber CEO, on a number of occasions. And I believe Ms. Brennan is on the line this evening if the council has any questions for the chamber. So moving on to the next slide, we have some additional information about our finances and needs. So just to sum up, our city prides itself on delivering on our community expectations, delivering community services, meeting our needs, despite having one of the smallest budgets per capita in the county. We are faced with COVID revenue losses, just like every other city. Ours are about $800,000 this fiscal year. We've taken several steps to help making sure we are delivering a prudent and balanced budget and balanced financial situation. We believe we've done that through the actions of our organization, through the actions of our council, in providing leadership to consider economic opportunities over the last several years. But we're strained in providing funding to meet community needs that the public has said are important for us to achieve. Major street repairs, sidewalk improvements, to the agenda item we just talked about, we have a $10 million price tab for repairing major streets in our community. And it's difficult to foresee additional funding outside of a sales tax measure or other source to that degree. Sidewalk improvements are a significant need, as we just talked about. And right now, we don't have sustainable ongoing funding to take care of those needs as well. Business support and recovery is a relatively new need, but a vital need in today's environment. Our business community is doing what it can to stay afloat, And we've seen with our micro grants how city funding can help provide a lifeline to help businesses weather these storms and recover from this pandemic. And also public safety services, fire, emergency medical services, neighborhood policing, core elements of local government that for our community have been not as funded as well as they could long term, particularly from a staffing level standpoint. So these are really needs that we have been striving to meet, but are truly unmet to the degree that our community is looking for. Additional funding through this measure would help us in making further progress in meeting these needs as we go forward and continuing to deliver the results that I believe we have demonstrated time and time again over the last several years. And lastly, I'll say that we understand that this is a difficult environment to consider a tax measure. We are cognizant of those concerns raised not just by businesses, but by residents in this current economic situation. We're aware of that. We do believe that this particular funding source could provide additional funding to help those in need, businesses, nonprofits, childcare providers, maybe residents as well. And this gives us another tool that we can use to help in creating a better economic situation for our community. And I also say that again, when visitors comprise nearly half of the revenues coming in, that provides an additional source of income that we can put to good use in helping meet community needs. So moving forward, the next steps before the council this evening are the resolution that would actually place the measure on the ballot this fall. We also have a draft ordinance that would be considered for adoption if voters approve this measure. We also have two other resolutions that would set forth the plan for developing an impartial analysis of the measure, also to submit ballot arguments and allow for public arguments as well. The council may choose to revise the ordinance and resolution before you this evening. And also, when all is said and done, you may change the ordinance and lower the tax amount, just not going above the amount set forth by the voters. Council can always go at a lower amount as a council choice. And roughly $15,000-$20,000 is the cost that we estimate to place the measure on the ballot. So the recommendation from your staff is to adopt the resolution that calls for the placement of this measure that would add a 1% transaction and use tax, sales tax, to the November 2020 ballot, and also adopt the related resolutions regarding written arguments, impartial analysis, and the filing of rebuttal arguments. And with that, we're glad to answer any questions and take your comments.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Robson. Appreciate his feedback. Sorry about that. So let's see if we have questions of staff. So let's go ahead and start with Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Hi, I don't have any questions. We've had a very thorough discussion on this last time. I'll be listening for comments of the public and my co-counsel.
Very good. Councilmember Lance.
Same. I think most of our questions were answered in last meeting. I was curious, and I this is not necessarily material to our decision, but if Monterey and Santa Barbara counties, which are 1% above ours, if they're considering in communities in those counties, they're considering a tax increase, because then the ratio would just, the proportion would just be the same. Instead of us meeting them, but if that information is not available, I don't think it'll sway my.
So I guess ultimately that's a question for Mr. Bronson, if he's aware of any outside county initiatives to increase sales tax measures.
I'm not aware offhand, but what I will note is that the city of Santa Maria did enact a 1% sales tax increase about a year and a half ago. So their rate was recently reset at 8.75%.
Very good. Councilmember Lance, any other questions? Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Wright, any questions?
Just one regarding the text of the measure. So that is something that we would do tonight if we were to want to change it?
Or yes, that's correct, Mayor Pro Tem Bright. The council is asked to adopt a resolution that includes the ballot wording, as we need to submit this to the elections office by the end of July. If the council wished to amend the wording, then that's a discussion that we would ask the council to have this evening and adopt an amended version of the resolution.
Okay. Thank you. That's my only question at this time. Thank you.
Very good, and I didn't have any questions either, as we did have a good, healthy discussion about it at our last meeting prior to tonight's effort. So I will go ahead and just announce one more time that if there's any member of the public that wants to speak on this item, please call at 805-321-6639, and I'll ask our city clerk if there's anyone besides Ms. Brennan on the phone for public comments, and I'll see if Ms. Brennan wants to say anything on this item.
No, there is no one else on the line.
Very good. Thank you. So, Ms. Brennan, did you want to make any comments on here? I know you're here for responses to questions, but I wasn't sure if there was anything you wanted to add.
Sure. Thank you, Mary Lee and Council. I'm available for questions. The only thing I would add is, first of all, thank you for being a pro-business community, for investing in economic development and business assistance. It's been such a pleasure to be able to provide assistance in partnership with the city through the micro grant. And I know the businesses are very appreciative of that. And for many of them, it really truly gave them the ability to stay open right now. I would also say that your work on childcare is showing a lot of leadership to the businesses as well, because the workforce cannot get back to work without childcare. So the Chamber did launch a survey, and this went out to 242 businesses, and we sent it multiple times through email, and we also posted it to social media. And as the city manager mentioned, we also discussed it several times at the Grover Beach Steering Committee, and I just recently sent it again because this agenda item was coming up tonight, and as of this evening, we only have 14 responses. And so, to me, that doesn't constitute a very valid survey. But I will say that of the 14, 11 were opposed to a sales tax, one was in favor, and two were undecided. And so the Chamber Board of Directors didn't feel that that really... that we didn't have a mandate from the business community to weigh in on this measure. So I'm just here this evening to answer any questions related to the businesses, and I'll stay on the line. Thank you.
Very good. Thanks for that, for those comments, Ms. Brennan. One really quick question for you, and I don't know if you have the answer for this, but I recall that at our last meeting, you actually had 10 responses. And so are these the number today of 14? Does that mean in the subsequent 2 weeks you had four other responses, or are these additional responses?
Correct. Yeah, no, we don't have 24, we have 14, so we only got four additional responses by sending the survey out again.
Okay, very good. And I know I did receive a negative email regarding placing it on the ballot, so I'm anticipating it's probably one of the 14 people that responded to the chamber request as well. So thank you. So unless there's any questions for Jocelyn, I will go ahead and close public comment on this item and bring it back to the council for deliberation and direction. And so perhaps I'll start, because I did, if you don't mind, I did have a request into the city manager earlier today about possibly making some changes to the language. But as he's bringing that up, perhaps we do the proverbial straw poll and make sure that we are all supportive of moving forward with placing this on the ballot before we start to get into the nuts and bolts of actually approving the resolution and making any changes to the language. So so unless there's anyone who wants to speak about not putting it on the ballot, go ahead and come forward. And as just so I'll take everybody's silence as wanting to move forward. So we'll go ahead and turn it back over to Mr. Bronson for some revised ballot wording with me as a kind of a introduction here. I had seen the language that was brought forward and just had a real minor tweak to it. And the tweak was in the first line to include, rather than maintaining streets, maintaining major streets, because that's kind of the focus we've had for this discussion previously. And then supporting, and I think it said something like supporting through local businesses or supporting local businesses through recovery from the COVID-19, and just took out the word through. So supporting local business recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. And then the other change that I had was kind of relocating the words with public oversight to after that, rather than towards the last segment of the language. I don't think it changed our word count. And I know, 75 words that we can do? And I think per the city manager, this still provides us at 73. So those are kind of just my wordsmithing comments, and I'll turn it over to Mayor Pro Tem Bright, because I think she had said she had some potential wordsmithing as well.
Yes, thank you. Those really were, that was a bit more than what my concern was. Mainly mine was the major streets. That's what my concern was. So you went above and beyond, but I do like where you went with that. So thank you.
Very good. So we'll go to Councilmember Lance.
I think that the proposed amendments are great, and they provide a little bit more clarification for.
Okay. Councilmember Shaw.
I think the wording here is good. One thing I just am a little concerned about, but we just kind of talked about in the last item that we may need funds to also maintain our residential streets, not just major streets, but I don't know. We don't want to pull people too into the weeds, because if you say maintaining streets, then that can get confusing. Well, what about the K-14 funds? So that was just one thing I thought about. But I think this revised, and it's a general tax anyway, and I think this revised language gets us as specific as we probably need to be in 73 words. So, yeah, I think it's fine.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that was my idea of adding in the word major streets, is that I didn't want to draw undue reflection of people saying, hey, wait a second, you're doing another ballot or another tax initiative for streets, where this one really our discussion has been with major streets. So unless Mr. Bronson, you had anything to add on the wording?
Just that... what's listed here as the examples are really examples of unmet needs. This is a general measure, as Ms. Shaw mentioned. Ultimately, the city council will have the authority and discretion on spending these general revenues. These are examples of unmet needs and examples of what the council has said are important for us to continue focusing and funding. And so that's important to kind of illustrate these needs as part of the measure.
Could I make one comment before we move on?
Certainly.
I just wanted to say that I'm glad that we're addressing these and letting people know what these priorities are. On our community survey, we hear streets and streets and streets again and again, and Grand Avenue we hear about all the time in our major streets. So I really think this is important, and I just can't emphasize enough that I just feel, and I'm sure others do too, that this should be the decision of the voters, not just us. So I'm just saying, let's put it to the voters and see what they say. And maybe this isn't the right time, and they'll tell us that. So I appreciate the opportunity to ask the public what they think of this. And I know we did receive one negative email. It was kind of focused on maybe public safety or something, but I want to just share that during the course of this meeting, there was a fire 5 houses away from me And there were 9 public safety vehicles here before I even smelled the smoke. And you can see I'm still here on this meeting. So, you know, you really can't put a price on that. But our people, our safety emergency workers have been working for, you know, probably well below market value. And their value is priceless. So I just want people to know that I really appreciate this. And I hope that the voters appreciate the opportunity to weigh in.
Very good. Councilmember or Mayor Pro Tem Bright, you have your hand raised.
I do. And thank you. And thank you, Miriam, for those comments. And I did want to weigh in as well. And that is my sentiment as well. And because it is important, I think, that we allow our residents to have a voice. And this is their opportunity to say yes or no. They were very adamant about the things that they felt were important in their city. And this is the way that those things can happen. So this doesn't mean that we're gonna make this happen. It's the voters who are gonna make this happen. So that's why I am so adamant about putting this on the ballot, so that our residents can decide for themselves. So I appreciate you getting that started, this discussion started, so that we can really make that known, so that we didn't just squash this before we even got it started. Anyway, I think that is important, so that our residents do understand that we think that their opinion is really important, and it is. So I think I've said enough on that subject. But anyway, thank you for allowing me to have my say.
Certainly, and I think we all have expressed that opinion, that desire throughout the last course of the last 2 meetings, is that, yes, this is really a community decision. And as the city manager aptly put, if the community says this isn't the right time, we will have put it on the ballot, and they will have told us that. And if it is the right time, then we will have an opportunity to utilize the funds that come into the city from this measure in the way that the community has asked us to do. So I'm supportive of putting it on the ballot for those very reasons as well. So I think everyone has great points and appreciate all the feedback and the input. So so from that perspective, I guess the next steps is to move forward with recommendations. But before we do that, I did want to I did have a question for the city attorney, because the resolutions are a little bit confusing to me, shall we say, on the fact that in some places it says 500 words for the city attorney's justification, but only 300 of those words can be put in the booklet, and then the rebuttal arguments are 250 words. And so I wanted to give the city attorney a moment to kind of assuage my fears and say all the numbers in the resolution are per state code, and as confusing as it sounds, somebody else will figure it out.
Mr. Mayor, there are 3 pertinent codes in the election code that deal with these numbers. They are arrived at based on what is in the election code. Section 9280 deals with the 500 words related to the city attorney analysis. The other 250 words relate to elections code 9282. The 300 words and the 250 words limitation relates to 9285. So they're all embodied within local code requirements, and this is just reflective of that.
I definitely appreciate that. So that explanation. So let's see if anyone is ready to make a motion or a recommendation on the actions tonight.
I can make a motion. I motion that we adopt the resolution calling for the placement of a measure to add a 1% transaction and use tax, sales tax on the general municipal election.
Okay, and I think we do have three actions this evening, so should we take these all as one item, or, Mr. City Attorney, shall we do them as three separate actions?
I'd recommend you do them as three separate actions.
Okay. I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second, and just a clarifying question is, with the language as revised and shown at tonight's meeting?
With the language as revised at tonight's meeting.
Very good. Is the second okay with that?
Yes.
Very good. We have concurrence from the first and the second, and so Madam City Clerk, if you would, roll call, please.
Councilmember Lance.
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. So that is the first action. So who wants to take a shot at the second action?
I'll make a motion then that we adopt the resolution setting priorities for filing arguments and preparation of an impartial analysis.
I'll second.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes.
Councilmember Lance.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
And Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. So we have our second recommended action. So who wants to move forward with the third?
I'll go with that one. I move that we adopt the resolution providing for the filing of rebuttal arguments.
I'll second.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. So we have a roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw.
Yes.
Councilmember Lance.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. So I think we have concluded action on this item. Thank you, everyone, for your work on that. So unless City Manager, did you need anything else on this item?
No, sir. We will take it from here. Thank you, Council. We will move this forward.
Very good. Thank you, everyone, for all the good work on that. So that does close our regular agenda for this evening. So we do have a public communications, and for our city clerk, I'll see if there's anyone on the line that wants to talk under public communications for items that are not on the agenda this evening.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. So we'll go ahead and close public communications. We'll bring it back to council committee reports. Let's start with my computer coming back to life. And we'll go ahead and start with, Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Alrighty. Grab my junk here. Okay. Well, I had a couple of meetings. First of all,
you don't want to miss any of the action. First was an RTA meeting. It was a special meeting, and the new bus facility bid was finally awarded to Specialty Construction in the amount of $16,873,000. That was pretty much the gist of that meeting. What I found really interesting is that the new bus maintenance facility will have no fueling stations. It's for electric buses only. So that was the gist of that. And then I had an IWMA board strategic planning retreat And there's some interesting stuff going on there. The county is considering possibly removing themselves from the IWMA. We'll see how that goes. That's still under consideration, so I'll let you know how we go, how that goes along. And then I had a Zone 3 meeting, and the big news there is the terminal dam either needs remediation or decommissioning. So the TAC has recommended that there be a study to determine which is the best way to go. So the board approved to have that study done. So once we get that, then we'll have a better idea of how we should move, how we should go forward with that. So that's my report. If you have any questions, let me know. If you'd like any additional information on the side, I'll be happy to give that to you.
Very good. I appreciate that. Yeah, you had some meaty items there. So with regards to decommissioning of a terminal reservoir and possibly dissolving of a JPA organization. So those are going to be items that are going to definitely be of interest in the next couple months.
Yes, they certainly will be.
But good news that RTA is going to get a new bus shelter.
So, yes,
yes, exactly. So next we'll turn to Councilmember Lance for her reports.
Thank you. I just had one, and this is not incredibly meaty. It was Grover Beach Steering Committee, South County Chambers of Commerce meeting. City Manager Brunson provided an update to the business community on what we've been doing as a city and our COVID-19 response. There were a handful of the microgrant recipients on the call, and they were incredibly grateful for the funds that they received. So just forwarding their thankfulness to the council. I think it's made a huge difference for a lot of businesses. A couple things discussed was the closures of personal care services again. I will say, you've probably seen it in the news, but I've also, side note, I have my cosmetology license that I never use. So I got an email from the Board of Cosmetology today about being able to offer certain services outside. So I think some of our local businesses are going to look to see how they can do that, whether it's providing hair services or even esthetician and massage also fall into that, I believe. So that will be interesting. I know that the city manager Bronson also mentioned this in our meeting that we obviously are very supportive of our local businesses, and as long as we can make it safe and mitigate any risk, we are looking to help businesses do what they can to continue operating, which also includes potentially some outdoor seating for restaurants in public right-of-ways. I think we're working, and I know City Manager Brunson can provide an update on that during his report, but some of the members that were on the call were kind of polled informally on what they would like to see, and there were no restaurants on the call, so it's a little different, but people are just more concerned about safety if it was a long grant, because it is such a major throwaway that maybe some comments were as if the seating's on the sidewalk and, you know, there's barricades for people to walk by maybe on the road, then that would maybe be more enjoyable than if the seating was on the road itself. So just some comments. That's all for me. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you for those. And then we'll turn to Councilmember Shaw.
Yeah, I just had one meeting. I had the HSOC meeting. There are actually so many different grants regarding homelessness in the pipeline, and a lot of them have very quick timelines because they deal with COVID. So our county got a technical assistance group called Homebase involved, and they're going to help provide, and they're free service provided by the state, and they're going to help providers to wade through this grant process. So I think that'll be really helpful. Just even myself, just learning all the acronyms is nearly impossible. So I can't imagine trying to fill out applications for these things under emergency conditions. One thing of note, and we can discuss it more in council communication, but when this first happened, the governor came out with a Project Room Key, which was let's get everyone into a hotel room who's homeless to not have slow the spread of COVID. And now he's kind of transforming that into something called Project Home Key, where they are really, really looking for hotels that would be able to be converted to actual apartment long-term solutions, because we just don't know how long this is going to last, and, you know, then create the housing because there could be a recession after that. So I'll bring that up more during council communication to see what people think. But there was that. Another thing I want to share, we had a quick presentation by Dr. Rick Rosen, who is the, I think he's second in command to Dr. Penny Bornstein. And he said it's really against CDC guidelines right now to clear homeless encampments or disrupt homeless encampments. So I know for a lot of legal reasons, we can't really disrupt homeless encampments, but I know there was something in Paso because they do have to clean out the riverbed. So these things are happening, but they really need to be dealt with very carefully, because the guidelines right now are not to disrupt people where they are and then send them out into the community. That is like a no-no. So also just, we had, as I kind of stated briefly earlier, we had a lot of great safe parking things and camping. The Oceano campground was being used for people during the initial COVID crisis so they could stay out of the streets, but some of those projects had gone away, and the campground was back with the state parks and was thinking of opening up. And now these COVID places and isolation places are needed more than ever. So I would just, you know, encourage us and any county spaces, they need to be made available again, because it looks like, unfortunately, this isn't over. So that was all from HSOC.
Very good. So my only committee report this month is from Five Cities Fire Authority. And we did a couple different things where we authorized the grant purchase of a utility task vehicle, which was also included a donation from the family of the Slow Stringer gentleman, Matt Frank, and also a state grant, which is administered by Slow County. So there is going to be an opportunity for recognition and naming rights associated with Mr. Frank and the Slow Stringer associated with that. So, and then there was weed abatement has been approved and undertaken by the Five Cities Fire Authority program consultant, and we did approve putting those costs onto people's property taxes. This year it was a little different. It was specific to the fire hazard associated with the weed abatement, and not strictly nuisance removal as has been done previous years. So it did come in within the allotted budget, and the chief is comfortable with the fact that the fire hazards have been removed. So so that concludes our council committee reports, except for the League of California Cities, and I do have one item here, and then I'll turn it over to Councilmember Shaw and then Mr. Bronson. So, but I was actually selected as part of the team to be one of the presenters at this year's League of California Cities event in September, and that is now going to be virtual rather than in person. So, but it's the topic has to do with public outreach for capital improvement projects, and the one that we got chosen for was basically Newport Avenue. and our sidewalk outreach, and the pros, the cons, the positives, the public input that we received on that. So myself and then Jim Lewis from the City of Pismo Beach, their outreach project for Shell Beach Road. So we're looking forward to presenting on that in a virtual format. So then I'll turn it over to Councilmember Shaw, see if she has anything on the League of California Cities.
That's really exciting. I cannot wait to watch that. So I have a meeting this week with our board members, just a Zoom call, and I'll probably have just our local Channel Counties division, and I'll probably have updates after that. But we're trying to just improve our virtual presence, at least so Channel County members can kind of feel more involved. And we had kind of done some videos to promote the CARES Act funding and why we need it. And we kind of want to tweak those. And so more to come. We'll be meeting this week.
Very good. Mr. Bronson, anything on League of California Cities?
No, sir. Nothing that hasn't been shared.
Very good. So next I'll go to Council Communications, and I think it was Councilmember Shaw. I think you had Council Communications.
Yeah, I brought this up with the city manager. He suggested I should ask what everyone thinks of this, because it would take some staff time. So as I said, Project Room Key is morphing into Project Home Key, and I got an email from Haslow that there's like a very short timeline that grants are available to convert hotels or motels. And it's kind of one of those things where if the stars align, there could be a hotel or motel in Grover Beach. Maybe there's somebody who wants to sell. Maybe there's somebody who wants that Haslow can develop and get the grant. So, I mean, we don't have a ton of people to contact. But would we be interested in kind of just having staff work with Haslow a little bit, do the legwork, and just see if there might be a business owner that's interested?
Looks like Mayor Rittenbright is moving forward.
So you're saying... Mm-hmm. Would we not only have to find the grant funds, but also find a seller as well?
So Haslow, from what I understand, and I have to go back through the email, but Haslow would be doing the grant application. They just want to know, are there any viable hotels out there? Is there anyone that would be interested? And I was talking a little bit with different homeless service providers saying, you know, why has this not happened in Grover in the past? And they said, well, in the past, years ago, Grover didn't want to lose the TOT from any hotels. But yeah. The hotels that I would think would be interested in this really aren't the big contributors to our TOT. So... I've made these phone calls myself in the past. You just kind of track down the owner and say, hey, are you happy or do you want to sell? And but I just wondered if we want to explore that path, because I've heard about hotels being converted and this being a priority for years, but it's never happened, at least in South County, to my knowledge.
So Matt, what do you think? I mean, what kind of time commitment do you think this is going to be?
Thank you for the question. Yes, I did suggest to Ms. Shaw that we get full council concurrence. I don't think it'd be a significant amount of time, but because it's more than just a phone call, I want to make sure we had council concurrence on this, and just to convey that it's a matter of finding if there's a willing seller. Also, there's an issue about coastal zone and any kind of coastal commission issues, rezoning. So there are some complexities in this, but I think it's a worthy concept if the full council is in agreement. And before we spend some staff time, I just want to make sure that there was concurrence that this is worth exploring. And if it pans out, great. If it doesn't, then at least we tried and saw if there was value in this.
Councilmember Lance, any comments?
I think it's worth looking into. Homelessness and housing is a major city goal, and if it involves, you know, not a substantial amount of staff time to see if there's even a little bit of interest that we could run with, and you don't know until you knock or call. So,
and I guess that's kind of my thought as well, mm-hmm. is if it turns into an opportunity to capture some affordable housing effectively, or homeless services housing, I think that becomes a benefit for the community. But yeah, it sounds like it's a short fuse with kind of a limited amount of staff needs for that. So I'm supportive of staff kind of moving forward, but kind of realizing that if it does turn into a proverbial black hole, then kind of step back and say perhaps not the right time.
Yeah, thank you. And like I said, we've been down this road and it's never come together. But even though it seems like there's a lot of homeless funding coming now, everyone in the industry of housing the homeless seems to agree that once this funding dries up, we may, because of the economy, not see funding for a long time. So anything we can bring to the community now would be great. The other thing I just wanted to bring up briefly was I was really interested in Councilmember Lance's update about the beauty salons, and I was just wondering if there was a way we could put out on our social media or reach out to salon owners to say, like, we get creative in Grover Beach. Like, if whatever is legal to do in a park, I mean, I think it'd be really cool to see massages in the park or whatever. I mean, I want them to know that we'd be open to that, and I don't know what best way. I don't even know what exactly is legal, but I don't know the best way to maybe just let people know, like, hey, if you have an idea, we're supportive of it as long as it's legal.
Well, you know, they have done them before, like at the concerts in the park, mm-hmm. I believe, or at the different functions that we've had where they've had people do like 10 or 15 minute massages. I think it was at the Stone Soup, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, you know,
I believe so. Yep.
So I think it's possible, because I know that we did allow that. People had certain licenses that they got. My brain isn't quite right, but I do remember that we did have those before outside in like a tent, I think, or a covering.
Okay.
And if it's legal right now to give haircuts outdoors, I mean, I would love to take my son to get an actual haircut in the park. We've been doing it at home, but we've been doing a bad job.
Oh, tell me. It's not pretty.
Nice. And I know the city manager has under his report an item about use of public spaces for that. And so maybe that's with consensus. We can have him take a look at that as well.
Okay,
to see
you.
What kind of out of the box thinking we might have. So let's see. So who haven't I called on yet? Karen, any council communications?
No, thank you.
Desi, any council communications for you?
No, thank you.
Very good. I did have an opportunity to, I know we all received an email from several residents of the Five Cities area regarding fireworks, and I had an opportunity to meet with a number of them on Saturday morning and talk through a very lively discussion, and it kind of gone both ends of the gamut. So zero tolerance, we should have no fireworks, and how do we do that, to safe and sane is okay, but how do we accomplish a illegal firework crackdown, for lack of a better term, and how do we change state law to not require visible visual of the observation of a lighting up of a discharge or of an illegal firework discharge. So very good conversation. Great to be part of that. I think what it boils down to is at some point in the foreseeable future, trying to figure out if there's any appetite on the council side to communicate first with internally with our council, and then ultimately going to Arroyo Grande and OCSD to determine if we can have a consistent method of trying to figure out what's happening with fireworks. And I know the, both the police and Five Cities Fire Authority will need to be as part of that discussion. So my, I guess my ask for tonight is staff time permitting and in his council communications or with in his discussions with the city manager and the general manager of OCSD and Arroyo Grande, do we want to bring an item back to the council for discussion of fireworks in general? And I know there's nonprofit concerns, fundraising concerns, and how all that works. So let's see if there's a consensus to have that come back at a future agenda.
I agree. We should. There's been just so much discord around the fireworks issue. I believe that we should.
Okay.
I was wearing fireworks last night, so I agree as well.
Okay.
Yeah. I would like to hear from people because I don't know what some people, it's almost split 50-50 when you see it on social media of love versus hate versus ideas. But I really do appreciate the residents that reached out because I always appreciate people who they said, we don't just want to complain. Like, we want to sit down and talk and we'd be willing to be part of a solution. So I thank the mayor for doing that meeting. And I thank them for trying to address this in a productive way.
Yeah. I think Lori Christopher and Dave Machado were very instrumental in that, and Dave did a great job of keeping everyone on track and having a productive conversation, because otherwise it could have gone very haphazard, shall we say. Short of providing any direction tonight, I think for the city manager, as he does bring it back, perhaps a discussion on what's currently out there, and that does, as to Miriam's point, is that it gives us an opportunity to let's have a lively discussion about it with the residents and see where it goes and see what can be done. So it's kind of an open-ended ask, I guess, at this point. So Mr. City Manager, does that concern you overly, or does that provide some semblance of guidelines or pathway?
It does not concern me overly. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. I always believe local government is not just a place for delivering services, but for discussing community priorities and values. And fireworks is an issue that always comes up, to Ms. Shaw's point. There are a lot of different viewpoints, a lot of perspectives, and we can certainly provide a forum and a place to bring those together. There's a lot to unpack in what the council articulated with regards to safe and sane fireworks, illegal fireworks, what enforcement we are doing, what we could do further, how police and fire work together, how other cities work together. And so what I would probably say is, given our work program right now, given other priorities we're focused on, this is something that I would foresee coming to the council in early 2021. I think this will need time to unpack and time to really work through thoughtfully with our neighboring communities. So I would not want to rush that process, but to bring it back to the council in the early next calendar year so that any changes that can be made can be done in a timely manner before July 4th, 2021.
And I think that works with the time frame of the folks that I was talking to on Saturday. Obviously, the earlier the better. But we have already banned fireworks, all fireworks, on New Year's Eve, which was one of the days that we had. Obviously, the fireworks season is kind of from May to September, and then it kind of kicks off again around New Year's. So I think giving an opportunity to have a discussion in early 2021 in advance of the May kickoff timeframe, I think works and gives opportunity for staff to address existing workloads and existing items coming forward on the agenda. So the only other council communication I have is going through the city over the weekend. It was great to see some of the businesses having tables outside in their parking lots. I know Little Bits had a number of tables. I think Jalapenos had a couple. So I sat outside at Station Grill, and so people are really trying to find ways to make things work right now. And I think with that, I'll turn it over to the city manager for his report and comment, because he may have some other ideas on how to move forward with that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. Just three quick items on my report. First, I wanted to highlight that our July edition of the Grover Gazette newsletter was sent out earlier today. This is our new electronic newsletter that goes out to over 2,000 subscribers, along with our social media followers and also on our website. So we're getting a lot of reach with this newsletter. It's a chance for us to highlight different issues in the city. This month's edition highlighted the micro grants I'll talk about in a moment, along with water quality reports, budget adoption, and other items as well. So it's a great way of furthering our reach across the community. We're very pleased with how it's unfolding. Secondly, on the micro grants, just to again give kudos to the council for your leadership in establishing this first ever business micro grant program. We were pleased to be able to send out 20 checks to business recipients. The checks have all been sent out, and we've heard from the businesses how ecstatic they are in receiving these grant funds to keep them going in this difficult time. As you may have seen, the Tribune ran an editorial about a week ago that lauded Grover Beach in showing leadership in having these grant programs be a tangible source of economic development funding to help support our business community. So a great kudos to the council and our community's leadership in moving this forward. And then lastly, to the mayor's point, I have been working closely with our staff members and also Jocelyn Brown of the Chamber on outdoor dining opportunities. We want to really be nimble, be adaptive, be flexible, and helping our business community go outside as pursuant to state public health guidelines. So we're developing a plan to help do that using private spaces, parking lots, private areas, but also public spaces, sidewalks, and potentially what are called parklets, which are small portable tables in a on-street public parking space. We need to make sure that they're located in a safe area and that we're taking steps to minimize liability to the city, and I'm working diligently with our city attorney on that. But we're trying to push that forward now in a way similar to what San Luis Obispo has been doing over the last few weeks. So to that end, I have a request to the council so that we can help expedite this program. I am wondering if the council's open to having a special meeting next Monday at 5:00, right before our joint meeting with the Planning Commission that's scheduled at 6:00. We would want to do two things: bring a resolution to the council to establish blanket authority to move forward with some kind of outdoor dining program. I'll come up with a name for it before Monday, but it gives us council authority to move forward and help carry this out. And two, we also would like to use this time to further flesh out the child care initiative idea. Given the discussion a few hours ago about child care, we'd like to bring forth some ideas that we thought of as staff to help in accelerating this need and using some of our one-time funding as a city to help carry out this vital economic need in our community. So we think this would be a good way to help do this on a night the council already has a meeting scheduled. That way we don't have to schedule another special meeting in August, and we can give you all a well-deserved break before our August 17th meeting. So if the council is okay with that request, we would do a virtual meeting at 5:00 as just the council, and then open it up to the Planning Commission and council at 6 p.m. And I'll pause there and see if the council is okay with that request.
Yes.
I'm in.
And Mr. Mayor, you're on mute.
So everybody, I love the fact that everybody responded as I was muted, so that was wonderful. Does anybody have a concern with the 5:00 time frame? Are we all good with that? Good. So, City Manager, you have our blessing.
Wonderful. And again, this is staff trying to expedite this work so that we don't wait another few weeks. We want to get this done now. And lastly, I wanted to reference that in addition to outdoor dining, we're also trying to utilize our parks for outdoor activities. And we'll consider the outdoor barbershops, hair salon activity as well. But we're also working with some providers to do outdoor fitness classes, yoga, Zumba, using Ramona, Grover Heights, 16th Street Park. So stay tuned, more to come on this, but we are actively working on this as we speak to help unveil something here very, very soon. We have great outdoor spaces, and we have to all shift outdoors right now. Let's take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
Very good. Great ideas. Okay. Very good. Any questions for the city manager?
Kudos.
Exactly. Kudos. Good job. So I'll turn it over to the city attorney and see if he has any reports and comments this evening.
No, I don't this evening, Mayor.
Very good. Thank you very much. And we don't have any closed session post meeting tonight. So unless anyone has anything else to wave at me and raise your hand really quick, I will say we are adjourned until Monday at 5 o'clock. Right. Thanks, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Good job, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.